Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name is Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's edition of Bodcast, where we're going to be in conversation with Dr. Austin Banner, that's a trustee at the BDA Benevolent Fund. Welcome, Austin. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I wonder if you could just introduce yourself for the benefits of the people listening to the podcast.
Well, you got my name already. It's Austin Banner. I used to be a consultant orthodontist. I am now retired, and I've been retired for as near as makes no difference, 2 years. I've been working with the Benevolent Fund. As a trustee, I look after Southern Counties branch of the BDA, and I sit on the executive of the Benevolent Fund, and it's the executive that looks at the individual circumstances of people that may need assistance and makes the decisions. The decisions are then just ratified by the board.
So we were talking a little bit earlier on, and you were saying that quite often people that you meet that aren't connected to you either through work or through personal life don't really know about the BDA Benevolent Fund or what it does. So how would you describe it to someone that hasn't come across it before?
Benevolent Fund is what it says it is. That is, it's benevolent and it is looking to help people. The people that it helps have to be on the GDC register or have been on the GDC register or dependents of one of those people. And although we are badged BDA Benevolent Fund, the fund is actually independent of the BDA and looks after all dentists that have been in the category that I've just mentioned to you. The fund is funded in two ways. We have an endowment, an investment, and the investment produces enough income to run the fund, which then means that all the donations, and we're always looking for donations, all the donations go directly to the beneficiaries.
Right. Now, could you perhaps bring to life with maybe some examples the kind of people that you end up supporting?
One of the statistics that I gave you before we kicked off on the podcast was that over half of the beneficiaries that we look after, the trigger that took them into difficulty was problems with the General Dental Council. And the problems with the General Dental Council tend to fall into two groups. The large group is where there is a complaint from a patient. The complaint tends to go direct to the General Dental Council, and in general terms, the reaction of the General Dental Council is to suspend. The second group, which is a smaller group, is where there has been a problem with the CQC. The CQC have alerted the General Dental Council, and again, the default position appears to be they go straight to a suspension. Then, of course, we have a situation where we have a dentist who no longer has an income. The grinding systems at the GDC can take a little while, up to 2 years. It is possible for a dentist to get to the end of that sequence and to find that there is no case to answer. Even under those circumstances, getting back into practice is very nearly impossible. They need to get back into their education. They need to get insurance, and they often need to get a performer number. And if there is a history of having been involved with the GDC, that can be so difficult as to be impossible.
So, I mean, one of the things that we've picked up from research that we've done just recently through our NHS Confidence Monitor is that high levels of anxiety that particularly NHS dentists, but it's not exclusive to NHS dentists, but particularly NHS dentists feel when it comes to complaints and litigation of that sort. Now, one of the things that I've heard the protection organisations talk about is the sort of mental pressure, the health, that sort of stress of dealing with that process. And then, of course, the bit that you can easily forget is the financial pressure that comes with being suspended and not being able to practice. So which of those two do you tend to get involved in?
I'm not sure the split is very clear. I would think it could easily be as much as 50-50. Mm. Picking up what you have said, if you are working at a pace. Now, I have not worked in general dental practice for a long time, but I've worked in the hospital service. And contrary to popular belief, we can go really quite quickly. If you are working hard and fast, it is easy to ignore the patient and the patient's requirements outside of the direct dentistry. That is a recipe for a patient complaint. It can be as trivial as he didn't listen to me. It can be as marked as, oh, there were inappropriate things said. And if you are going at a high rate, then the risks of that happening, I think, are high. If you go to the financial area, then as we were saying earlier, I think there is a group of dentists that don't keep a good control on their finance. Now, you know, we as dentists are trained to be dentists. We are not trained to be accountants. We're not trained to be financial wizards. Some of us are brilliant at it. I am not. But if we are not, then we do need to have advice and somebody looking after that. Again, within the fund, we will find beneficiaries coming to us that have found that they have been £100,000-£300,000 adrift. And we are looking at these people and saying, how did you get there?
Absolutely. So I mean, it's one of the things that I've encountered quite a lot during the course of my career is that thinking about cash flow management doesn't come easily to the majority of practice owners. So even though they're running a small business, it may be in the business of providing care to patients, but it's still a business. That they don't focus on the finances, and is that tends to be what happens, is it?
Yes, I think so. I think so. But again, every case is different. Some of the financial problems we get have got nothing to do with the practice finance going adrift. I mean, it can be some people that get into financial difficulties because maybe they have been ill, maybe they've had personal circumstances, and the financial difficulties can be even associated with people that are on salaries, where the financial control is not necessarily the issue, but they are still getting themselves into financial difficulty. Most of our beneficiaries don't have a single issue. I've said when I'm on my hind legs and I'm speaking, most people can cope with financial problems. Most people can cope with being ill. Most people can cope with, say, marital breakdown. Most people can cope with even a degree of mental illness. Most people can't cope if they get 2, 3, or 4 of those. And if you look at our beneficiaries, nearly all of them will be hitting 2, 3, or 4 of those issues. And we have to try to unravel all of them.
Now, one of the examples that we were talking about earlier on really struck me, which was, I think, of a dentist. I think she was around about 42,
yes,
something like that.
Yes, this lady was in purely private practice in central London. The trigger here was the CQC. They did a routine visit. They found that some of the paperwork in relationship to the hiring and firing of staff, and we're talking about staff that were hired about 10 years ago, was not quite in order. The CQC contacted the GDC, and the GDC suspended. That was in January this year. The lady had recently gone through a divorce, so was financially constrained, but was in the process of buying a property and was very close to completing the purchase of this property. But because she no longer had an income, she couldn't complete that purchase. And there was this lady, a competent dental surgeon, 42 years old, sofa surfing, because she could get nowhere. And the fund was able, eventually, we have to think about it quite hard, the fund was able eventually to bridge the gap between what she had already paid and what was needed to be paid to purchase the property and get a roof over her head. And we considered that that was a very useful and appropriate expenditure of funds to get this lady off the sofas and into her own property. The good news is that she has now been exonerated by the General Dental Council, no case to answer, and she is now back working. So we consider that a huge success.
Well, that sounds like almost the perfect illustration of the value that the Benevolent Fund can bring, because I guess there would have been a chance that someone would have been lost to the profession completely unnecessarily if you hadn't been able to step in and help.
Yes, and you know, it's an incredibly stressful situation to be. You know, I met this lady with our general manager, and she walks in, a very confident, competent woman, starts to explain her situation and dissolves into tears. And you get some idea of how this is affecting individuals. And yes, I think she would have been lost to the profession.
I think that's one of the reasons why I was keen for us to be able to talk to you today, because I think the that intensity of pressure that seems to be on the profession at the moment is, it seems to be at higher levels than I've ever known it. And I was wondering, what is that translating into a greater demand for what the Benevolent Fund does?
Interesting. I had prior notice that you were going to ask me that, so I had a look and a think. And I think the reality is that in pure numbers, the number of beneficiaries is about stable. But that hides the fact that the age profile is changing. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the majority of our beneficiaries would have been, as I've said, my age, and I'm now retired. So there would have been mature people coming towards the end of their career or after their end of their career, running into various problems that you would expect at that age. The current situation is quite different. Our average now for a beneficiary is round about 40, which means that most of our beneficiaries are between late 30s and early 50s, with a bit of a skew towards the lower end of that. And to complicate that a little further, and almost unrelated to everything else I've said, is that we are now picking up a group of students, which is a different set of issues. It's around debt that these students are in, and they're coming up to the position where they would want to qualify and register. And unless they've got good family support, and we've now got four that do not have good family support, they do not have the funds to be able to get through the registration. So we are now helping this group as well. We were concerned a few years ago that this might be an issue. In those days, I think we saw one student every 3 or 4 years. We're now up to about 4 a year. I don't know quite where that's going, but I suspect it's going north.
Yeah, that's quite shocking, really, isn't it?
It's very different.
That point that you're making about the profile, and the age profile, that I mean, particularly emphasised by the example of the students, that is really worrying.
Yeah. The quality of what is required is also changing. I think when we were dealing with largely a mature elderly, I suppose I dare call it, since I'm elderly myself, group of beneficiaries, the requirements were relatively straightforward. Didn't have quite enough money week by week to live, and we topped it up. the requirements now are really quite different. And I've explained to you that one about needing some sort of capital amount of money. In this particular situation, we were talking between 10 and 15,000 to get from a situation where you are on the street into somewhere where you've got a roof over your head. And that sort of order of problem is getting much more common. So when we're discussing in the executive, we are looking at how do we fund rather larger amounts of money. And that's alongside, of course, all the ones that require the ongoing support to get food on the table for the kids and that sort of thing. So we do a lot of that as well.
And I think I should just make sure it's clear to everyone that, as I understand it, it's really their personal finances that you're...
Absolutely. The Benevolent Fund itself, under no circumstances, will support practice finance. We only deal with the personal impact of what has happened if there's been a practice issue. So that had there been an issue in relationship to that lady's practice, we would not have been able to help. And that is outside of our remit with the Charity Commission. We cannot do that.
Okay. So Austin, what's the sort of process? So a student or someone in their late 30s finds themselves in financial difficulty where they can't pay the rent or they can't pay the mortgage or something's happened. What process do they go through in approaching you?
Well, first thing, they need to know we exist.
Yes.
Yeah? And that is actually a big problem for us, and we're trying to make sure that everybody does know we exist. Once they know we exist, they would contact us in one way or other. There might be a telephone call, it might be an email, it might be a letter, it might be anything. And they will have an initial conversation. I have an initial conversation with our general manager. She is a professional. She's not a dentist. She has a background in law and human resource. And she will talk through the claimant with what is the problem, get them to explain it a bit more, and then send a form. This is an application form, and it's a fairly detailed form, which will ask for what are your current circumstances, what do you own, what have you got in debt, what are your outgoings, what's your income, all of this sort of thing, and then the form is sent back. That will then be looked at, and if there's an executive meeting coming up, it'll be discussed around the table. Quite often it isn't. There isn't one coming up, so it's done by email. We will look at the form, and very rarely on the form we would be able to make an immediate decision. Usually we can't, and then that individual will be visited. In the first instance, the person will be visited by our general manager, person-to-person visit, and she will write a report, and that then goes alongside of the application form. That then is looked at by the executive, and the executive will come to a decision, which can be, I'm terribly sorry, you really just don't meet our criteria, you've still got loads and loads of money in the bank, and you know, go back and do something else, right through to, gosh, we need to get an emergency grant out to you. And we can usually get an emergency grant out to somebody from initial contact to an emergency grant. We can usually do that, if we need to, within 4 or 5 days, if we really need to. We can go like grease lightning if we need to. And that would normally be done by direct bank transfer now. Then, once the initial problem has been addressed, we will then look and see what the long term should be. And that could be a medium long term, that could be 2 months, 3 months, that could be a year. We wouldn't go beyond a year without a review. So every beneficiary will be reviewed after 12 months. That could be just a paper exercise, depending on what it is. Usually it involves a visit, and at that stage, a dentist will get involved. One of the trustees will go and do a follow-up visit. And that provides the other part of the support that the Benevolent Fund can offer. It's beyond just the cash. We're then pitching up and saying, hi, how you doing? How's it going? What's going well? What's going badly? What do you need now? and then that will go on, depending then on how it all resolves. Sometimes it doesn't resolve, sometimes it resolves.
I guess sometimes you would be signposting them to other people, other organisations?
Because we are primarily a financial relief organisation, where there are other issues like a drink problem or a mental health problem or social problem, because our general manager has a good background, she usually knows which organisations are the right organisations, and we will signpost. We can't actually provide financial advice, we can't actually provide health advice, but we can point them to where they can get that assistance. And if that assistance, for instance, it might be you need an accountancy fee, we might pay that. So if there was a specific issue that required a fee, we might say, well, actually, yeah, we could pay that.
So if someone was so financially stretched they couldn't unlock a potential solution,
yes,
then you can help them.
Yes, we could look after the financial aspect of dealing with that problem, but we wouldn't deal with it ourselves.
And where does, and this is probably my last question actually, but where does the Benevolent Fund secure its financial resources from?
Two ways. We have an investment portfolio, and that produces approximately half of our income. That covers the running of the fund. So our staff and our expenses are all covered by the investment. Then there is donation. And the donation comes from almost exclusively dentists. It comes through the BDA branches. It comes through the LDCs. It comes through individual donations. It comes through raffles and this sort of thing that we have at branch meetings, these sorts of things. And that money goes direct out to the beneficiaries. So we are able to say that every pound you give to the Benevolent Fund will go out to a beneficiary. None of it will go into running the fund because that is handled by our investments.
I think that's a really important and interesting point, I guess, because when you hear things like every pound is spent, you sort of wonder how can that be? But that makes perfect sense that you've got the investments there to draw upon. Excellent. Well, I must say, I've been working with the profession for 27 odd years or so, and I've learned so much in this last 15, 20 minutes. It feels to me as if the Benevolent Fund is doing an absolutely fantastic job. It performs a sadly an increasingly important role, I think, amongst particularly the younger members of the profession, given the profile.
I think that's true.
And I'm very pleased that we're able to help raise the profile a little bit. And I'm very grateful to you for giving up your time to meet with me today, Austin. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. Thank you.